Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and John O'Bacon, episode 110 for February 25th, 2010. Webmen. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show that covers free, libre, and open source software. Joining us today, we're so glad to have him, Mr. John O'Bacon from his studio. Hey, John.
Hello.
Good to see you. Hey.
Good to see you.
Should anything happen to John in the making of this show, we'd like to point out that he is, while normally using Ubuntu, the fine Linux operating system that never crashes, he will be using, in a feat of daring do, Windows for this.
I can't imagine anything's going to go wrong with Windows, so I have complete confidence in the duration of the show.
Also with us, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Randall Schwartz. Hey, Randall, how are you?
There's a really strong prediction that Windows will not crash sometime during the duration of this show.
I feel confident.
Hi, Leo. Good to talk to you again.
It's great to talk to you again.
It's really weird seeing Jono on the little square screen there, because Jono and I were just this weekend down at Scale together, the Southern California Linux Expo, and he spoke well, and I did my presentation on Smalltalk, had a great time there, bumped into a lot of cool people. Actually, it was really fun. Cool because a lot of Floss Weekly listeners came up to me during the conference and said, love Floss Weekly. You know, and they used to come up to me to talk to me about Perl, but now they're up to coming up talking to me about Floss Weekly. So I guess at least 10 or 20 people are downloading this show every week. So this is really nice. It's been a real cool cool deal. And thank you to all my fans that came up to me to see me at Scale. That was cool.
It was fun. The event Scale is a wonderful conference. If people get an opportunity to go along next year, it's well worth it. The organizers do a great job. And it was good to see you, Randall. I actually thought you were actual size when we record, so you're a bit taller than I expected.
Actual size.
You've met me in real life before. You know I'm not. It's just a little 4-inch screen there.
He wasn't wearing his heels that day.
Oh no! You're referring to this thing behind me here.
I'm still in LA.
I'm actually staying at Captain Neil. You know Captain Neil Bauman, who runs the Geek
Cruises.
Captain
Neil, he's Mr. Geek Cruises. So he's the one who wears the pumps.
Apparently, I didn't say it. I'm not saying out loud. Not saying out loud.
No. But, you're in his daughter's room.
But careful how you say that to his daughter.
That's a healthy scenario.
Well, you can stay with us, but there's a problem. We only have one bedroom. You're going to have to sleep with my daughter. I've heard that joke before.
Wow. So, yeah, so I'm in the LA area. I'm busy working for Neil this week, working on the Insight Cruises website and a bunch of other stuff for him. So, keeping me a little busy. If you're watching the live stream, yeah, that's where the girls' shoes are. It's nothing to do with me. Right. No, I have no tendencies that way. I wouldn't even fit in those shoes.
It's fine. If you want to wear pumps. Yeah, innocent. That's not the word I use with Randall, but that's another matter entirely. So, Randall, what are we going to talk about today?
We are talking to actually somebody who I bumped into over the weekend at Scale. I had him scheduled for the last few months on the show, but sort of coincidentally, I was in his presentation on Virtual Men, which we'll get into a little bit today. But really, the main claim to fame that Jamie Cameron, our guest, has is WebMen, which is a sort of a web-based tool to edit configuration files on your system to keep it simplified so you can not have to figure out all the different formats or how to edit it or something. So it's actually been around for a really long time, and it's he's almost a legend because there are a lot of tools that have come out since this, but really I think this was sort of the original inspiration for a lot of those web-based administration tools. So I'm glad I bumped into him. In fact, I bumped into him during presentation. He said, oh yeah, thanks for reminding me, I'm on the show. I would have been telling you tomorrow anyway by email, but I'm glad I saw you today. So there you go.
Well, and I use WebMen. I think a lot of people have used it in the past. It's something very handy, very useful, and it almost feels like infrastructure. So it's kind of good to underscore the fact that a person exists who does it, who's behind it. Mm. Shall we
just
get them on?
Just before we go there, though.
Yes.
Before we go there. The Symbian show last week really stirred a lot of interest. I had a lot of people tweeting about it. Again, the timing that we had for that show, which was getting the Symbian guy on right as Symbian was becoming open source, really helped all that. But I just want to say thank you to all the people who, you know, the dozens of people wrote me and said, this is great timing for this show. I'm lucky when that happens, but just wanted to say thank you to people who are writing about that. And it's really is amazing that this operating system that's used by, I think, more machines in the world than even Windows. So there's more Symbian installs than there is Windows installs, which is huge. Just an amazing number of things. And that was sent to me a couple of days ago. Somebody pointed that out. Like, so my 4 million Symbians and only like a 2 million Windows, no, whatever the numbers are, it's like about 3 to 1. So the number of handsets to the number of Windows installs is about 3 to 1.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, let's get Mr. Webman on. Jamie Cameron. I'm going to get him on now and find out where he's calling from. And where are you, Jamie?
In Mountain View, California.
Right. And that is Webman headquarters.
I wouldn't really say it's a headquarters, exactly.
It's where the whiteboard is, apparently.
It is where the home is where the whiteboard is.
Yeah.
So we tried in our best and fractured way to describe Webman. Would you tell us what Webman is in, you know, for real?
So Webman is basically a web-based user interface for system administration. So instead of you as the Linux user having to go in and edit configuration files manually, you can do it all through a web browser. Makes it easier, reduces the chances of making mistakes.
I use Plesk. Is it like Plesk?
So it's sort of more general purpose than Plesk. Plesk is for web hosting specifically.
Right.
Webmin is for just general system administration.
Ah, I see.
And it really is able to control pretty much everything in a system, right? I mean, your goal is, of course, to have no editing ever of configuration files, at least not for common tasks, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it has a bunch of different modules for different tasks. So it has modules for mail servers, you know, send mail, postfix, modules for like Squid, proxy server, file sharing, Apache, you know, DNS server, a bunch of stuff. There's like 100+ modules currently.
Now, did you start Webmin? Are you from the beginning of the project? Was that your idea?
Yeah, it was my project from the start. It was about 12 years ago now.
And what motivated that? What were you doing at the time, and why did you think having a web interface would make it simpler for you?
So back at the time, I was a system administrator, and I was getting a lot of requests from users to like edit DNS configuration files. So that was taking up my time, adding records and so forth. But I couldn't trust them to go in and like edit the files manually, because if you make a mistake, you basically messed up your DNS server. So I created a very simple web interface for them to do it through a browser, which prevented them from making mistakes, but still let them make changes. And then I realized this was sort of more, this whole idea could be made more general and could cover a whole lot of different services. So that sort of evolved into Webmin.
Now, you said users. I mean, you were letting non-root people access your DNS records?
Yeah. So these are people I didn't give the real root password to, but I gave them a login to Webmin, or the ancestor of Webmin, and they would only be able to change DNS records, and you know, only in certain domains.
Now, is that true with the current Webmin then? Is there like partitions of tasks that are available to different users and maybe different groups of users?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you can create multiple logins to Webmin, and you can give those different logins different permissions. So you can easily create a user who's only allowed to manage certain, you know, change the passwords of certain users, or edit certain Apache websites, or maybe only configure, say, the proxy server, but nothing else. There's quite a detailed access control system in there.
So this is actually a feature that's above and beyond, say, what having command line access would be. Because I know even with sudo, you're still trying to figure out, you know, how to prevent them from just escaping into a general root shell. And obviously, you can't get them to edit one part of password file without editing another part with sudo. So this is this seems to be an actual project that enhances your system then.
Yeah, in a sense, yeah. You can do things with this Webmin interface that you couldn't you couldn't allow people to do via the command line, because at least in Linux, there isn't really any way to set up that kind of really detailed file or service level access control. You can try and fake it with permissions, but it's difficult.
Yeah, and kind of hard when two people need access to editing portions of a text file or something, because there's not really, unless you build specialized tools, you're not going to be able to do that.
Yeah, exactly. And Webmin has support, has features to prevent that kind of problem by has like locking to prevent concurrent access to the same file, that kind of thing, so that people don't override each other's changes.
So the basic process is that if I'm already using a system that's Webmin set up, I'm just going to a web page and authenticating somehow, and then I have a list of options available to me. How would I get to that point, though? How do you set that up? Is that tricky?
Not really. Let's say you have, you know, pretty much any Linux system, any Unix system even. You just download the Webmin package, install it. Say if you're running some kind of Red Hat derivative, then that's just installing a single RPM. Then you open your web browser, go to, you know, your machine name, port 10,000, and log in as root, and then you're done.
So I don't have to set up Apache to talk to this thing? It's actually all standalone, isn't it?
Yeah, it has its own built-in standalone web server, so it doesn't depend on Apache, which is an advantage because it configures Apache. So if it was if it was depending on Apache, then it could end up
it'd be an endless
turning
loop,
itself off.
Like Ouroboros eating its tail.
Does it have pretty configuration much. Menus for itself, though? It must, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It does. I guess if you were smart enough, you could break it in a way so that you can't access it anymore.
What would be the point of that, though?
So when I first heard that you were going to be coming on the show, if I'm being frank with you, the first thing I thought was, oh, Webmin, let's rock out like it's 1998. Which I know is a bit of a smack, but this leads me on to a constructive question, which is, I know a bunch of people who think of Webmin as being very innovative back then. How's Webmin changed in the last, 10, 11, 12 years? I mean, what's been the primary focus of its progress?
Well, I mean, the user interface has certainly changed several times since then. From back in the day, it was a very sort of simple icon-based user interface, and then it has changed to one that had really garish icons, which looked good, in the 90s, but eventually sort of went out of style. And now it's sort of a more of a menu-based, mostly text-driven UI. Right. Over the time, we've added a bunch of new features, like new modules for things that it can configure, added new translations into different languages. Just keeping up with the most recent Linux distributions that come out is a major undertaking.
Of course,
because every Red Hat Fedora release or whatever changes the locations and formats of configuration files that Webmin is responsible for editing. So, keeping up with those is an ongoing effort.
So it seems like, back then, which is my primary experience, I remember people were really excited about Webmin because it was just, it really did make life so much easier for a lot of hobbyist sysadmins, but also real sysadmins as well. So you say that the UI's kind of been shifting around and changed and developed and matured. Has that kind of developed into like a Web 2.0 kind of Ajax-powered, very interactive experience? Or is it still, you type in a value and you click submit?
It's still pretty much the same interaction model that it has always been. It hasn't gone to a Web 2.0, heavily Ajax design. In a way, part of that is pure laziness on my part, but I just haven't bothered to do a complete rewrite of the UI to change it to that style.
I think Floss Weekly viewers would agree that somebody who maintains a project for 13 years is clearly lazy. You lazy bastard. Sorry, carry on.
but going with that style of UI has had its advantages. Like when I recently added support for access from mobile devices, you know, iPhones, that kind of thing, it was actually relatively easy because I didn't have a vast amount of UI code that had to be changed or scaled down from what would work on a PC display to what would work on a phone. The existing relatively simple interaction model could be pretty easily converted to smaller screen devices. And I think that would have been a lot more work if I'd started with a more Ajax-y, you know, Web 2.0 style UI and then had to convert that to work on a phone.
Wow. So it sounds like the the core focus of the project is really accessibility. It's and breadth of the of what Webmin can do, right? It sounds like you basically want to be able to configure and provide a UI for pretty much anything that's involved in typical sysadmin kind of work. Would you say that's correct?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, really covering as many different functions and services as possible has always been an objective. Of course, I can't cover everything that exists out there, so it has a fairly extensible design that lets other people build and make available modules that can be plugged into it later to add functionality, maybe for their own custom projects, maybe for things that I haven't gotten around to using. There's a good one for, say, Dan's Guardian, for example. Right. That is a Squid proxy, a Squid sort of content filter that was developed by another user, and there's a bunch of others out there.
So has there been interest from Linux distros who are producing, server-based operating systems? Has there been interesting? I mean, does Webmin ship with some default distros?
It's usually available as an optional package. I think it's in like the Fedora Extras repository, and I think Mandrake, or Mandriver as it is now, ships with it. I found a lot of the interest has come from people creating sort of appliance or focused distros, or distros focused on managing a particular kind of service. They use Webmin as a base to build their user interface on top of, instead of having to implement everything from scratch.
Right, gotcha. And do you find that a lot of people will install like a base system and then they'll choose to install Webmin afterwards? I mean, do you have an idea of the kind of typical user that you have for Webmin?
I'd say the typical user is sort of the Linux user who doesn't really feel that comfortable with regular system administration and just wants a simpler user interface. But then again, I do get a lot of requests from more serious sysadmins who want to reduce the chance of them making errors, or who want to delegate authority to different to lesser sysadmins.
Right.
It's probably also good if you're using systems from varying kinds, so you don't have to remember what particular Red Hat operation there is for something versus, say, maybe a FreeBSD box sitting next to it then.
Yeah, that's a plus. The user interface sort of abstracts away the underlying sort of locations and formats of configuration files. So if you're editing users on a Linux system, the UI looks pretty much the same as to what you'd see on a FreeBSD system or a Mac or a Solaris system, even though their file formats that they really use to store those users are different.
Mm-hmm. How well does it scale? I mean, can I manage 10 boxes with this, or 100 boxes, or 1,000 boxes, and can I do sort of mass operations across them?
Not really. It's primarily designed as a single machine management tool. It has some modules that can manage clusters of machines, so you can do things like add a user to multiple machines or install some software package on multiple machines. And it has some modules for dealing with LDAP, so you can set up an LDAP database of, say, users and groups, and then and then share that between machines.
Okay. What's this? I know the answer to this, but I just want to hear it. What's this written in?
Perl. It's all written in Perl.
Oh man, what a leading question that was.
But now you wrote it, in 93? No, 94?
I think it started in like 97, 98.
So that was all Perl 5 stuff by then, I hope?
Yeah. It's all Perl 5, but even then, I don't make use of a lot of Perl 5 features, unfortunately, because even then, Perl 5, I think, was relatively new, and I was new to Perl when I started it, so it nowhere near makes use of all the like the object oriented functions in Perl 5 to the degree that it should, and it's given the size of the project now, it's difficult to re-architect it to have a better design because there's so much code there that reorganizing it to be more object oriented or to use modern Perl practices is difficult.
Well, and you have all these plugins that are written by third parties. It'd be kind of hard to coordinate any kind of a flag day with all those too.
Right. Yeah, that's a big issue. I've always tried to maintain compatibility with the old modules and plugins. So I really don't want to make some change that would break them all.
What did you use for the web server then, Perl? Is it all handwritten, just listening to a socket, or did you use something like LWP for that?
No, I wrote my own web server in Perl. I think I couldn't find one that I liked. I don't think I could find any web server written in Perl when I started it. So it's had its advantages, writing my own one. I can do a lot of trickery, like preloading certain libraries, like adding my own authentication mechanisms to the web server that would otherwise be tricky. Supporting, say, sudo as an authentication mechanism and SSL client certificates. Those kind of things are easier to do when I have complete control of the code.
How about testing? Do you have good tests in there? I'm kind of guessing no.
No. I'm embarrassed to say that the testing is pretty poor.
How did I know? It just was something that large. I mean, you're talking probably, thousands, tens of thousands of lines of code, right?
Yeah, I think it's over hundreds of thousands of lines of code now.
Hundreds of thousands of untested Perl lines of code. Yay.
Managing your system.
But wow. It works, so that's the problem. I mean, it works, so that's good.
So I have a quick question. As a desktop Linux guy, I tend to view the world as a Linux desktop, rather than surprisingly. Wow, that was a piece of wisdom for everybody.
Thank you for that, Jono. You know, if you say it with a British accent, it all sounds great.
It's always a pleasure.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
So if I wanted to write a desktop equivalent to Webmin, if I wanted to, to write something that was built into my desktop, does Webmin have like some kind of API that I can write towards?
I guess it does to a degree. Like you can call all of its functions via, say, XML RPC. So theoretically, you could basically replace the web-based API UI with some desktop program that then talked to the Webmin web server on the same box.
Right. I was just curious I was just curious as to whether the heavy lifting in terms of how you actually manage the configuration is done by Webmin, and then it's got a separate UI, or whether the UI and the heavy lifting elements are actually all rolled into the same code base.
It is pretty separate in the code between like the UI elements and the API elements that deal with the actual underlying config files. And in a lot of cases, that's made use of by one module calling functions in another module to do things. Right. Or even calling calling API functions on another system running Webmin to do remote operations.
Are there Python bindings?
You guys are just awful. Oh my God. What about Ruby? You got Erlang? Any Erlang in there?
Smalltalk.
No. I like it. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jamie. Just forget we're saying anything.
Okay, Emacs versus VI. Emacs or VI.
Now, that's a real question, Jamie, you don't have to answer it if you don't want to. You could take the fifth.
So you could call it from other languages using XML RPC, I guess.
That's right. Okay. It's all right.
You could also burn your hands off.
So do you work in VI or Emacs?
Oh, VI. VI all the way.
All right.
you get a few of them, Randall. You don't get all of them, you know? You got Perl.
Perl, though. Perl, but not VI. Yeah. Okay.
Get a few.
And now this is actually a community project, right? So you have people that are building more modules, but are they just building it in their own arena, or do you have a group of people committing to the core repository?
I'm pretty much the only one who commits to the core repository directly. I get patches from people to add support for various things. I get like contributed modules occasionally. I get a lot of translations from people. Mm-hmm. I only speak English really, so I'm reliant on volunteers to contribute other languages, and I get surprisingly large numbers of those.
Now are you using? I thought I saw Git on your archive though. Do you have like a Git archive of your repo?
Yep. Yeah, it's all in Git. It's all hosted at GitHub now.
Oh, so somebody could actually fork the project and send you Git patches, not just diffs then?
Yeah, absolutely. They could.
Okay, yeah, that's a little better than just... I was just thinking all of a sudden people sending you diffs. It's kind of silly. But, you know, back in the old days, how we used to do it.
Yeah.
So then what kind of a license is there for Webmin?
It's all BSD licensed.
That's cool. Great. So was that influenced by the fact that Perl was licensed that way to start with?
I can't remember why I chose that license, actually. I think it was probably just to make it...
The 7 degrees of Perl.
It's been so long and I've started, I can't remember. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I don't know. I might have chosen it just so that people could more easily build on top of Webmin without having to worry about their stuff being all GPL'd or something like that.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Where does the name come from? I suppose it's just web and admin.
Yeah, that's all it is. Web administration.
I thought you were going to say your daughter's called Webmin or something.
Yeah, such a hard-hitting question, Randall. Mr. Cameron, where does the name come from?
where does this web-based administrative tool...
And please remember that you are under oath.
That's right.
Yeah.
No, I'm not very imaginative when it comes to names.
No, it's
really
a good
just
name.
Short for web-based administration.
Yeah, you know what it is. I think it's good.
And the domain name was of it.
Or it could be the thing that makes the web browser minimized on my screen. But no, okay, yeah. Never mind. Hey, so you've got some other projects, actually. You've got like maybe a subset of Webmin. Is it? Well, describe what UserMin is. I was trying to figure that out from the website.
Okay, that's an even more oddly named one, which I'm kind of regretting that name because it makes even less sense. But basically, it is sort of like a variant of Webmin, but for use by... So Webmin is what you log into when you're root. UserMin is what you log into when you're some other user and you want to do some user-level kind of actions through your browser. And by far the most common one is just reading your email. So it provides a web-based UI for reading the mail that's stored on the system. And a bunch of other mail-related things like setting up email filters and forwarding and GPG and that kind of thing.
And actually, that just brought to mind something else. So Webmin is having to authenticate with me coming in over the web, but it has to do its actions as root. That seems like a really potentially dangerous situation, if you understand what I mean there. What have you done over the years and Have you ever been caught by surprise with some sort of security hole?
Oh yeah, unfortunately.
happens all the time.
Not recently, fortunately, but there's been a few over the years. Like you said, it has to access configuration files that are owned by root, so it has to run as root. So Webmin's core is a web server that's running as root all the time. So I've been notified a couple of times by, fortunately, good guys who have found ways to exploit this by sending like specially crafted HTTP requests that get around the authentication scheme and allow an attacker to access any file on the system, for example.
Mm. That can't be good.
No, it's not, and that's really it's like really worrying whenever I get one of those. I think I've got one for a couple of years now. And humorously, though, I still when I look at my own logs, my own personal machine for Webmin, I still see attacks by using a method that was fixed like 4 or 5 years ago. Obviously, the script kiddies out there are still scanning like every machine on the planet trying to find WebMin vulnerabilities.
Well, they're hoping that maybe you haven't upgraded to something in the last 5 years then.
Yeah, I guess that shows that it's become popular enough to deserve being attacked.
Well, continuing with the Min family, what's virtual Min?
Oh, so that's a variant of WebMin that is for web hosting. So you mentioned Plesk before. So it's similar to Plesk or cPanel. Basically, those are web-based UIs, but specifically for setting up websites. So virtual Min is something that is like built on top of WebMin with a sort of modified or more minimal user interface just for web hosting.
So it takes away some of the things I probably wouldn't want to mess with anyway. Like I probably don't have a lot of user IDs to manage on a web host, for example.
Well, yeah, I mean, it sort of abstracts that away a bit, and it organizes things by domain instead of by service. So in normal WebMin, you have like an icon for your web server, an icon for your DNS server, an icon for your mail server. In the virtual Min UI, you select a domain, and then whenever you do some operation on a domain, like create a new domain, it'll configure Apache and your mail server and DNS server all at once.
And is that also BSD licensed?
That has two versions, actually. One of them is GPL licensed, and one of them is commercial.
And what's the difference between the two?
Oh, the commercial one has more features. Like it can do like automatic installation of other applications like blogs, like WordPress or Drupal or Joomla and a bunch of other stuff. It has some additional features that are of interest to commercial web hosting providers.
And this is still pretty much your solo creation, or are you working together with people
much.
On that?
Oh, I'm working with a guy called.
Working with who?
Sorry, I got a partner in crime on this called Joe Cooper, who helps out with a bunch of stuff, particularly like user interface elements in Virtual Min.
Now, is this? I'm just going to ask then, backing up a step. This sort of begs the question about what your business model is for WebMin. Is it? I imagine it was initially like a labor of love, but is this a full time thing for you now? And if so, how are you paying the bills?
Well, like WebMin itself is still free, but via our commercial products built on top of it, like Virtual Min, that earns a bit of money.
Okay, cool. And I guess the last one of the Min family that I could find, CloudMin. What's CloudMin?
Well, that's a new thing I've been working on recently. Again, it's something that's built on top of WebMin. This one is a totally commercial product, unfortunately, but it's for managing virtual machines. So it can manage like Xen, KVM, OpenVZ, those kind of things. It's mainly for like companies that want to do VPS hosting or people who want to get into like virtualization in general for, say, application management.
Now, would I use this if I was Amazon managing EC2, or would I use it as a user of Amazon EC2?
You would use it if you wanted to set up something that was equivalent to EC2 on your own hardware.
Okay. So this is more for an internet network service provider then?
Yeah, the biggest users are virtual, what they call VPS hosting providers, like companies that sell access to a virtual machine to their customers.
Cool.
So have you considered making a new product called MinMin, which is a web-based tool for managed Min-related products? That'd be a great
fit. Yeah. I think extra layer of administration on top.
Well, it sounds wonderful. It sounds like I had no idea that these other Min-related things, the virtual Min and the cloud Min and all that kind of stuff, I had no idea that they existed. I think a lot of people are mainly aware of WebMin. How do each of these different products connect together, in a good way?
Yeah, I mean, well, they're all built on top of WebMin. WebMin provides like the underlying web server and authentication system and a lot of the functionality that the other virtual Min and Cloud Min are built on top of. And Cloud Min also lets you like manage WebMin instances installed on other machines from like a central console.
Fantastic.
Yeah, maybe you should come up with a product, admin, ADDMIN, so you can create new min products as necessary.
Like a meta product creator. I don't know.
Hey, when Webmin is managing a file, are they? Does it take over the file entirely, or can I also use the command line tools, or does that just get everything messed up?
So it doesn't take over the file or anything like that. You can safely like use your editor to edit the same files that Webmin is editing. I mean, you probably don't want to be editing it at the exact same second, right? Because otherwise, there may be problems depending on who saves the file last. But yeah, it has no conflict with you doing traditional system administration practices of, you know, going in and editing files.
Is it smart enough to recognize anything I might do then to configure that file? Could I take the configuration file and move it far enough away from standard that it starts getting confused?
Yeah, pretty much. It can handle, I mean, the design I've always strived for was to be able to handle any valid, at least to be able to parse any valid configuration format. And even though like every possible option may not be visible in Webmin's UI, it doesn't mess up any options that it doesn't know about that you have added manually.
Well, that must mean you have parses for a lot of different things. I mean, there's got to be stuff like INI style configurations and tab separated files, colon separated files. How many different kind of parsers do you have?
Oh, God, I hate to imagine. There must be like at least 20, 30 different kinds of parsers. No, probably more than that, actually. Unfortunately, like almost no two Linux, you know, open source servers share the same configuration file format.
Yeah, and this is actually something that actually probably makes Webmin the really compelling product, because I have to keep relearning new configuration file systems every time I go to a new thing, and you've just put that all as one body of knowledge in Webmin.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's codified the sort of parsing of those formats, so it's really handy if you want to write some program of your own that has to understand those files. And recently I added like a Perl module, like a CPAN module that lets any Perl script basically call the Webmin API to read and and parse and edit all the underlying configuration files that Webmin knows about.
How much of the CPAN are you using at all, or is it all just handwritten code or plugged in or copied and pasted code?
So I use some of CPAN. I try to rely on like core Perl modules or my own code as much as possible to reduce the number of dependencies. Like my ideal aim is that you should be able to run Webmin with just standard Perl, no additional CPAN modules. There's a few cases where that's not true, though. Like if you want to have SSL encryption enabled on your, you know, on your connection to Webmin, it needs there's a CPAN module for that, and it uses CPAN modules for XML parsing, because implementing that myself is not a lot of fun.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, I'm sure there's some config files that are in XML, and I was just wondering if you're going to do that with regexes or not, but thank God you aren't.
No, that's the path of madness.
Absolutely. HTML and XML did not want to be done with regexes ever, no matter who wants to do it. This is just a word of warning. Anybody listening, don't. Wrong direction, don't.
No, it's impossible to do it correctly, in my opinion.
Cool. Cool.
Yeah, and there's some uses of, I think, LDAP, like talking to LDAP databases. I use modules from CPAN.
Now, you said earlier, just a moment ago, that it doesn't apparently necessarily run 100% of the application. Are you trying to hit like the sweet spot of maybe 80% of what the application does to be able to manage it and monitor it?
Yeah, like when I'm writing a Webmin module to configure some server, I look at like the most commonly used or the most useful looking options in that server's configuration file, and I make it possible to edit those through the UI.
Cool. Let me see if I have anything else here. Are you looking for more patches, more localizations? I mean, if you had a request of our audience, what would it be? What kind of more resources do you want for this?
Oh, certainly, yeah, more patches. Like, more patches is a big one. You know, especially if you're running a really recent like Linux distribution that I haven't tested a lot with, and you find that Webmin isn't working properly. You know, send me a patch. Tell me what goes wrong. That'd be the most useful thing that contributors could do.
Especially with so many different Linux distros out there now, it's probably a little hard to keep up with all of them.
Oh yeah, it's challenging because there's so many and they're always releasing new versions and each version changes something.
And localizations, any particular languages that are needed but nobody's done yet?
So I think like the European languages are pretty well covered. For some reason, Catalan is the best translated language. There's one guy there who is like absolutely diligent about sending me translations. Probably like Chinese, Japanese, Korean would be the ones that I'd like to see the most.
Cool. And I presume you're using UTF-8 everywhere, so it's easy to drop that sort of stuff in.
Yeah, in most cases, I have the translation files in UTF-8, or I convert them to UTF-8 from sort of the most popular encoding for that particular language.
Cool. Anything else that I've left out that you want to say to us?
No, I think that pretty much covers everything I was I would have thought of to talk about.
Well, good. It also covers pretty much everything on my list. I think
we lost
Jono. Too, so.
Oh, goodness.
Sadly, so you can't jerk Jono.
No, we'll get Jono back on here. My fault. I didn't see that he dropped off. Yeah, I was so engrossed in the conversation. I'm sure he's more than happy to be out of it. He probably did it himself.
Yeah. So, Jamie, just wanted to thank you for coming on today's show. That was good for us to learn about Webmin, and I'm sure that a few people out there will now say, oh, that's how I'm going to be solving my system administration issues. So, probably get a few more followers and listeners this way.
The person whom you're trying to reach
see, Jono's,
is currently
Jono's
unavailable.
Jono's lost his connection.
Please leave a message after the beep.
So, any message you'd like to leave for Jono?
Not really.
Jamie, great talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for a product that a lot of us use and have been using for years very happily. And I include myself in that. It's really a great, useful tool.
Thanks.
Thank you, Jamie. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Somebody said it seemed like we were grilling him for a job interview, Randall. So I wanted to reassure him that he got the job.
Well, sometimes you just, it's like, okay, so this does administration of my box. There's nothing sexy about this product,
yeah.
But it is solving an important, it's scratching an important itch.
It's very, infinitely useful. I'm telling you, I use it all the time.
Oh, very good. Well, I've never have. So it's again one of these things. As much Perl as I use, I haven't used this in any application. So it's it's like the configuration tools that we've had on recently. I like that aspect of it where I don't have to learn a particular machine's way to add a user or bring up Apache or whatever. And this is just one more way to get at that. And it's amazing at how many different ways this problem has been solved because of how many different ways at the lower level it was made a problem. everybody uses a different configuration file system. Though I heard a presentation many moons ago about people talking about using XML as the universal configuration file format. And they justified it by showing 20 different other configuration formats before they got to XML. And I said, if XML is a solution, you asked the wrong problem, the wrong question. It's really, no. I am not angle bracketing myself to death.
It could be worse. Well, you have tools, but you have tools that you use to write that stuff. You don't do it by hand.
You don't want to stare at
like
that
a make file. Do you write your make files by hand? I guess you probably do.
Of course I do.
Of course you do. Why wouldn't you, Randall? Why wouldn't you? But I think most people use tools, right, to generate all that arcane
really?
Stuff.
Really?
I don't know about make files. Maybe not.
Make files seem pretty simple there. In fact,
a
maybe
simple
we can
make file is simple, but when you have a 500-line make file.
We're going to have to ask next week's guest about that, actually.
Well, who is next week's guest?
Next week's guest, not make files, but C make files. I guess that came after
C?
A make files and B
C?
Make files.
C
make files.
C?
Exactly. We have Bill Hoffman on. He's going to talk about C make. which is a sort of a super duper make that was it's being used for really, really large projects. That I mean, one of the things that's wrong about Makefiles is that there's this weird sensitivity to having a literal tab character in the file. It's always been a little strange to me that you couldn't just do like eight spaces, but it had to be an actual tab character. And I think that's one of the things that was solved in CMake. And it sort of came more from the Java build arena, from what I understand. But we'll get Bill on. We'll ask him about that. We also have a very short list. We've got Carlos Puchol talking about Amahi, which is a home entertainment system, home firewall system. Matt Ray talking about Xenos, monitoring machines up and running. Doug Smith's coming on to talk about the ACM IEEE Supercomputer Challenge. I made a mistake in last week's show. I just want to clarify that. He'll come on to actually talk during the period of time that students can apply for this Supercomputer Challenge. And then the actual contest isn't until November. So that'll be great. So we'll actually get to talk to people about maybe even getting their own cluster of systems in and running. So lots and lots of other people on the short list. twit.tv/floss. There's a spreadsheet link there. If you want a project of your own on that, just get the project leader to email me. My email address is listed there as well. But be a little patient. I apparently have about 215 items in my incoming mailbox for Floss. So if I don't get to it right away, don't resend it three times like somebody out there did. Really, I am getting to them. I just got to get to them in the order that they came in. You can also follow me on Twitter at Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N. And just a little plug, I'm still looking for work. So, yeah, too bad we lost John, because I can't do his little plug at the end of the day.
Plug is he wrote The Art of Community, which is a great book and available on Amazon.com. Of course, he's community manager for Ubuntu, and he's on Twitter at twitter.com/JONOBACON. How about that?
Very good. Yeah. Very good.
And nice shoes behind you, by the way, for those of you watching on video. Randall is, I don't know, you want to make an announcement of any kind? No, those are not. Those are the shoes of the young lady whose woman you're. The young woman who's never.
You're not going to get that right either.
It's going to just get worse. It's going right downhill. You're borrowing a bedroom.
I am. I think we talked about that at the beginning of the show just briefly, but that's okay. I'll talk about it at the end of the show too. Which is it?
Yeah. We talked about it at the beginning of the show because we haven't recorded the beginning of the show, but you're going to put it at the beginning of the show. Okay, that's good. We'll get out of the way at the beginning of the show.
I think we're done, Leo.
Thank you, Randall Schwartz. Thank you all for being here. If you like the show, make sure you subscribe to it. Go to twit.tv/floss, F-L-O-S-S. There's a little drop down there. You can subscribe in iTunes, in the Zune store, or any podcatcher of your choice. You can also watch it live. We do it every single Wednesday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific time. That would be, don't tell me, 21:30?
During the winter, yes.
UTC. 21:30 UTC. And 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time.
And that doesn't change.
That never changes.
That's right.
live.twit.tv. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time. Free the Libra and open source software, baby, on Floss Weekly.